This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and my guests for the remainder of the program today are Diane King and Jim Rizzoli, and the websites of interest are CC File, and there's two I's in File, ccfile.com, jrizzoli.wordpress.com, and rizzolitv.com. Diane and Jim, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Deanna.
Thank you.
It's always so wonderful to talk with you, and I get all of your email, which I really, really appreciate. You're so proactive. Both of you are so wonderful in what you're doing. You just keep slugging away, and I just think that that is so admirable.
You too.
Well, I think that what you're doing is just terrific.
Thank you, dear.
And I appreciate it very much, very much. Well, tell us what's going on. There's been so many things going on, particularly this month with the things that were going on in Dresden. A lot of sad subjects, but tell us what's been going on.
You want me to? Okay, I have a couple things, interestingly, that just came in about the Dresden commemorative in the Toronto area. One, Christian Klein, who is a survivor of Allied atrocities, one of the seven people we interviewed in 2016, and one of the German survivors. And so, anyway, Christian Klein wrote a small report, and then Paul Fromm, who was an attendee at the commemoration, wrote something very, very small as well, and also then a reminder to remember Monica Schaefer as well. But Christian Klein wrote, further to report below, it should be pointed out that the incineration of Dresden was the greatest mass murder in our written history within the short time of February 13 to 14, 1945, in which between 300 and 600,000 people were killed, thousands of them burned alive, incinerated. And it still troubles the mind to understand what Winston Churchill must have thought when he proclaimed his wish to roast the thousands of refugees that had fled from the Red Army to find shelter in Dresden. There were three waves with hundreds of British and U.S. bombers between these 2 days, and another attack, which seems to have been forgotten, on February 17th with 572 U.S. bombers. In our commemoration hosted by the Coalition of Victims and Survivors of World War II, we not only remembered Dresden, but also the over 100 other German towns and cities that were firebombed and lines proclaimed British Air Force Command to seek out the interior of these habitations and to kill as many civilians as possible, nearly 2 million, which also meant the destruction of medieval cities and towns with their priceless artifacts and 1,000 years of history, the cultural heritage of Germany. Lady Michelle Renouf, and she's another item, if you will, in the commemoration dealing with Dresden in Germany, had come from England to speak at the commemoration of the city of Dresden on February 17, pointed out that what happened there in 1945 qualifies as a true Holocaust, true to the definition of a burnt offering. For bringing up this topic in her speech, which in Germany is considered a criminal act, she was detained and questioned for several hours by the police. Another person who had also come from England, Mr. Richard Edmonds, was prevented from giving his speech, but I have it here. He has sent it out since then. Paul Fromm states, the Association of German Expellees and Supporters commemorated and mourned the Allied war crime, the bombing of Dresden, in Toronto on Saturday. The bombing of Dresden was a violation of the 1907 Hague Convention, which made deliberate attacks on civilians a war crime. Dresden had no military manufacturing. It was not a military target. It was a cultural jewel and hub. It was packed with German refugees fleeing the Soviet army 70 miles to the east. Not to mention also, it was a center for bringing the military wounded. Churchill had called for the pasting of the civilian population. After high-impact demolition bombs devastated buildings, another wave of planes with incendiary bombs created a firestorm which incinerated tens of thousands or sucked the oxygen out of the air and suffocated them. And those were the lucky ones, the ones that were melted in the cement and caught on fire. And there was even testimony of people exploding. The next day, waves of fighters with turkey shoot orders, kill anything that moves, harried the survivors, shooting civilians, huddling in public parks or along the banks of the Elbe River. Initial estimates of identified or partially identified victims indicated about 300,000 victims of the war crime. However, there were about 200,000 refugees, most not yet registered with the authorities. Many bodies had been reduced to a pool of fat. Had the Nuremberg war crimes trials been anything other than a victor's kangaroo court, people like Winston Churchill, Joseph Stalin, and FDR, but I'm not sure if he was alive at that point, would have stood in the prisoner's dock. Attendees signed cards for Canadian Monica Schaefer, who was still in prison in Germany, for expressing her opinion in a 5-minute video entitled, "Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust."
Terrible that they have...
It will get you an indefinite prison term before trial. Yeah. And we have her address if people want to write her. I can give it to you at any point.
Sure. You can give it to us right now, if you'd like.
Sure. It's very simple. It's Monica with a K, Schaefer, S-C-H-A-E-F-E-R. And it's Schwarzenberg. Schwartz is black. Berg is a forest. So it'd be like Black Forest. Schwarzenberg Street, S-C-H-W-A-R-Z-E-N-B-E-R-G-S-T-R, 14. Next line, 81549, München, which is Munich, Germany. M-U-N-C-H-E-N is the spelling in German. So that, and then she's been receiving her mail because she's been sending out mail. People who, to Arthur Topham in British Columbia, has sent around a letter she has sent out. So I was able to send that out as well. And you should have gotten that too, Deanna.
Yes, yes, I did. I save everything. I have a file for you, a directory, and I put everything in that directory. And I'm just, whenever we talk about Dresden, whenever I think about Dresden, I just, it all but brings me to tears to think about what they did. And I sincerely believe that Churchill and Stalin and FDR, I hope they're roasting in hell. I hope they're...
Oh, me too. Me too.
These are they were despicable people who did despicable things. And, mm-hmm. and to see them treated, particularly Churchill, to see him treated with any kind of respect or dignified in any kind of way, it just infuriates me. He was a monster of the worst kind.
And all their little minions. Absolutely.
Yes. It's very interesting. The board op, who is just very, very smart, he said people never have to enforce the truth. But apparently that doesn't apply when you're talking about the Holocaust or Dresden or any of the other things that that we would be talking about today. This is really awful. Anyways, so she's still in jail.
Without any hope of reprieve or anything. This is, she's not even a German citizen, and yet her brother, who is just as outspoken, he's a German citizen, but they don't come after him. I'm not that I want him to, but I'm wondering what's going on with all this.
Yes, it kind of makes you wonder why they would target her for such a simple thing. What I would consider for a 5-minute video?
I think it's to set an example.
Okay. They do like to do that, don't they?
Yeah, try to warn the rest of us off from doing such things.
Sure, and it really works, doesn't it?
Actually, it gets more people interested and more people involved and outraged.
Sure. One of the emails that you sent out, Eric Hunt, is a holo hollow huckster. But then you probably figured that out. No surprise.
Jim is a kind of the resident expert on that topic.
Okay. Does Jim want to address that? I was very friendly with Eric Hunt. I remember when he was living in his car. And thank you very much for sending out the link to the three videos. And people should really download those videos because they won't be available. They could be gone at any time. But
he'll take them down.
Sure. But I remember when I first heard about him, I felt a lot of empathy for him. And I attempted to help him and several times. Well, I did. So Jim, what are your thoughts about Eric? And I don't want to, I understand that he might be in a bad situation.
Revisionist or whatever. Because that's, to me, it's like a waste of time, and I just don't like attacking somebody until they attack me. Now, the problem that I had with Eric Hunt is I had no problem with him at all. Okay, even with him doing what he did, I have no problem. Come to your own conclusions with life, and if you want to recant something, that's fine. But the thing that happened to him, he removed the
problem. There's an echo. Do you have the radio on?
And I think that's what bothered me.
Okay,
you know,
maybe
about him. And he kind of looked at me like I really didn't know what I was talking about, and so that really bothered me. And I was trying to give him an opportunity to get his views out there to everybody. And I was trying to be impartial. Because I don't, I look at people as obviously something more than, something more happened to him in his life to make him come to the conclusion.
So I
was
think
trying
so
to look, like, let's see what that is. And give him the opportunity to respond. But he kind of looked down upon me and he just, what would be the term you think? Condescending with me. He's very condescending with me. So, and I still hold the invitation open to him. But see, the problem, like you mentioned his videos, and that's why I sent the links, three videos, because I got a mark against me on YouTube, which, they give you three strikes to take the whole site down. And because I put up one of his videos, I thought, there wouldn't be any problem with it. I mean, he gave us permission to use his videos in our cable shows that Diane does in our town. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I put the thing up immediately. I mean, within just an hour or so of that video going up, I got a strike against me and the video was completely taken down. So it just shows that there's something going on there with him. And I guess he doesn't want people to see, what he said in those videos, because now he has a little different viewpoint to what he said. So if you use the video against him, it's like, Eric, you believe now the complete opposite of what you did in those videos. And I think the videos are great videos. I mean, they're really well done. I think he did a good job with them. But apparently he doesn't feel the same way about the videos now. So he's kind of come to his tracks by taking them down, or somebody is. I don't know if he's taking them down or is somebody working for him or working for YouTube to get them down. I'm not sure. So I don't know what the whole truth is here. But I still hold it open to have a discussion with him, to sit down with him and let him have his say, and I'll be happy to hear him out. I won't, I'm not going to get on his case. I'm just going to see how he feels. And why he's coming to those conclusions. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
Well, I've always felt that when he was here in America, when I became aware of him, he was living in his car. He'd lost family members because of his views. He had made so many sacrifices to present his views. He was in jail because he had the audacity to approach Elie Wiesel to just see if he had a tattoo on his arm. It wasn't like a physical attack, but Wiesel did take him to court, and he spent, I think it was 18 months in jail. And so he did believe what he was talking about at that point in time. And then he went to Europe, and I don't know what happened, and I certainly don't want to put him in a bad spot, or I certainly don't, we don't understand why his change of heart, why his change of views. We don't know whether he was threatened or whether he was, whether he is in jeopardy, whether his family, because he is married now. And
hey, I'd like to interject something, Deanna, real quick here.
Sure.
And
sure,
I've heard this before, and oh yeah, we're really sorry about that. And I have to admit, these people, David Irving and all of them, have been through a lot of stuff. That Jim has been through stuff, nothing like I have, but Professor Robert Forson was beaten up more than once. And he has not changed his mind. He hasn't recanted. He's almost 90 years old. So I don't accept, oh yeah, they might have been threatened and this and that. No, he was definitely threatened. He's still going to court in at least 5 cases because of the stands he's taken. He's still being prosecuted because he went to Iran for the revisionist conference. Robert Forson.
You put everything in perspective, and thanks for that. And okay. When Eric did this big switch, I thought,
yeah.
I did help him financially, and I felt somewhat, used. And I know that Fritz felt the same way.
Yes. Oh yes, he was fairly, what's the word when you're very outspoken? Vitriolic. I mean, he was, he wasn't shy about expressing his
feelings. Chris doesn't hold anything back. He does not hold anything back.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah.
And you don't either. And I agree with you. It's, but I don't know. He did some great work, and he had other plans. He was going to have this virtual museum. He was going to do all of these things, and then all of a sudden,
it's game over.
Like from night to day.
Yeah, I have a problem with that. Like I said, if it's because of some, and David Cole was the same way, degree. David Irving too, although he has really been through it. He was telling stories about how his home was raided and his books were thrown into whatever body of water was near his house. They were pulled out of libraries and bookstores. He can't get into various countries because, he's not a revisionist. He's a historian, for Pete's sakes.
Right.
But he has discovered some things. He's not even really a very good Third Reich advocate. Because he takes on Soviet archives as fact. Okay. Having said that, there shouldn't be this backpedaling to try to grovel before your oppressors. They're not accepting it. They still have kept Mark Weber out of England, and here he's been doing his share of groveling. So and David Irving can't get back into Canada, and I have heard tell he's been able to get in the U.S. kind of here, kind of there, but nothing for sure. If they're trying to gratiate themselves to the masters, it's not going to work. They've already screwed the pooch, if you will. But Robert Forson has not bowed. And he is the standard in this. He's one of the old core. Fritz Leuchter hasn't either. And they pounded him into the ground. He hasn't changed his mind. He's not as vocal because of his current situation, but he is not changed. And that's the thing. He's not a campaign to undo the good work he has done.
Right. Which is totally different than what Eric Hunt is doing.
That's
He's undoing the good work. Where the other people that you've mentioned, their work stands. Even though these terrible things have happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alrighty. We're going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back. And our guest the last two hours, right, is our Diane King and Jim Rizzoli. And the websites of interest are CC File, and File has two I's, ccfile.com and jrizzoli.wordpress.com and rizzolitv.com. And you're right. When we look at all the other people, and my friend reminded me that David spent 407 days in jail. Is that right, Mark? Anyway, people have gone to jail, and people have suffered and yet have not recanted. So, yes, what you're saying has merit. It really does. And I was just thinking about Michael Collins Piper. His main concern was not the Holocaust. He certainly talked about it. And it seems that everyone who does either destroys their reputation, or they get threatened, or they get beaten, or they get put in jail.
Or killed.
Absolutely. Or killed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Killed. So, that is, moving on from Eric Hunt, did Jim want to say anything more about Eric Hunt? I wonder if he'll ever...
I think the big issue...
Yes? Is Jim there or no? Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. And let's talk about Lady Michelle Renouf and what happened to her. And, of course, she's outspoken, too.
I've known her since 2004, when there was attempted revisionist conference in Sacramento that was bailed on by the creators of it. They had a little pressure and they folded shop, and everybody was coming in from all over the world to attend this revisionist conference. And she was instrumental in getting the National Alliance people. And we ended up having it in a gym, as it turned out, but we still met. And of course, it wasn't the grand affair that it was supposed to be. That's just the way she is. Her moniker, her saying is, I will not be bullied. And so she is, she's always been a real advocate. She's been, she hates the way the Jews are bullying the Germans and bullying the rest of us. She went to the Iran conference. She has been in the Middle East in a number of countries on behalf of revisionism. She is fearless, and she spoke at Dresden. Her crime was that she said the Holocaust happened to the Germans, not to the Jews. And that's when they took exception. They shut down the demonstration, and then she was detained with for questioning. For about 5 hours. She has produced videos. She has spoken with rabbis about the issue of the Holocaust, and to which they had said, and they had heard it by four rabbis
Diane,
that she spoke to. Yes.
Do you have the radio on in the background?
No.
Oh, okay. It may be
Is this any better? No, there's still a little feedback, isn't there?
No, it's better. It's better.
Oh, okay. Okay. But she was able to determine that when asked the rabbis, because they were not your Zionist type, but you know, they're still the Sephardic rabbis with the locks and the black hair and the hats and all that, the uniform. And if, if they had been able to save half of the Jews of Europe in whatever scenario you have, or have them killed to affect a better, another agenda, they says that the Zionists would have them killed. And see, that's what they want. They need the Jewish blood to affect their agenda.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Alrighty. We will be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And my mantra has always been truth can withstand the most intense scrutiny and does not fear investigation, but rather invites exploration. Or short, truth can withstand scrutiny, should not fear investigation. And I think that there are so many more people finding out exactly what didn't occur who have previously bought into that story, they have to put laws in. There's laws in what is it, 19 different countries that you cannot discuss?
35. Yeah, there are now 35. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, good news spreads fast, huh?
That is just amazing. 35 countries now claim that it is illegal to talk about it? Well, that
with prosecution in one degree or another. There's varying kinds of prosecutions, usually some kind of penalty. And YouTube, anywhere from some type of censorship to, if you're in those countries, jail and fines. And who knows what the death penalty is for that sort of thing. So,
and when you really consider it, think about it. We do have censorship here in this country.
Sure.
And I posted a video talking about how all of the books, very scientific books, incredibly scientific books, were banned or taken down from retail on Amazon, which you can look at the video about that. And it's a very, very well done video. It's a tremendous video.
Oh yeah, Guermar's video.
Oh, he's wonderful. Is he not wonderful?
Awesome.
I just love
him. He's very clear. Yes.
Yes. And so there is censorship here. There's, for goodness sakes, it's part of the school curriculum. It's part of the government curriculum. Government land was put aside for the Holocaust Museum. So definitely, we do have censorship here. It just isn't as visual.
One thing is, in this regard, I have a paragraph from Mike Walsh, very short, that maybe I can use it to sum up that, or at the end, or however you want.
Yes, go ahead.
Why?
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to have to run in and get it. Mike Walsh has a way of, he produces a number of books, and he has a way of, cutting through to it. And he talks about YouTube and Amazon. And it's very, very, very short. So if you will bear with me one second.
Sure, that app goes back, so I'm not sure.
Okay, you ready? Okay, he says the gloves are coming off.
Okay, Diane, are you on a speakerphone?
No, I took it off.
Okay.
Jim just went outside. It's possible Jim, with our being close together might have an effect on that. Okay.
Right. See,
Mike
fault.
Walsh says
don't you love
gloves
Mike?
Are coming off. Am I?
Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah.
You want me to go ahead?
Yes, go ahead.
It is a matter of speculation if increasing censorship by Amazon, Google, YouTube, and social media is a consequence of panic or their arrogance. My guess is the former. Slipstream media has lost the Holocaust argument, and they're now on the defensive. High-velocity alternative media soars like an Su-57 clearing Syrian airspace of U.S. Israeli aircraft. The counter-revolution is underway. Collateral damage as a consequence of people realizing they have been duped will be as far-reaching as was the collapse of the Soviet Union. The stakes really are that high. we enter a storm, but alternative media can handle it. The corporations can't, because light always defeats darkness. There will be more news as this continues. They are in panic mode and damage control.
Right. They sure are.
And
Mike was on the program last week.
And
he does, he does have a way of stating things. Just love Mike.
Yep. Well, I appreciate
terrific
it. I appreciate
person.
Everybody who stands, who speaks out on stuff like this.
Indeed. Oh, thank you for sharing that. Thank
sure.
you very much. So we were talking about, Lady Michelle and, and she was held for 5 hours and thank goodness they did release her, and hopefully she will join us on a future program. There's some other things that you've sent out. Let's see. Jim has interviewed some incredible people. Would Jim like to talk about the people that he has interviewed? If you hear a cat in the background, it's Leo. Leo
okay.
has he
that's
has decided right. he has decided that he wants to eat. He wants his mommy, but we're just going to ignore him.
Well, I've interviewed I think about 15 of the major people dealing with revisionism, and of course a couple of them have since died. So, but you know, that's what my main purpose was, you know, when I got back going with video and all this and that and revisionist stuff, I wanted to have some sort of record of these people, you know, having their say. And I was trying to get Ern Zunil to be interviewed, but
oh, yes.
That never happened. And, I feel bad about that, but, that's a whole other story what happened there, I think. And, I really wanted to hear, you know, what the updates were with him and all this and that, and I never really got a chance. So, there's other people I'm trying to get interviews with, but I don't know if it's ever going to happen. But that's it. I mean, I tried to get as many people in as I could, and I'll still go back and interview some of these other people to get updates, like Grandma. I usually get an update with Grandma every year, and Fred Lupta, get an update with him. And see how it goes and what's going on with them guys there, you know.
Well, who have you interviewed? Just give us a little record.
Well, I started with Father Son. I interviewed Father Son. I interviewed Bradley Smith. I interviewed Girma. I interviewed,
Tobin.
Let's see who, Tobin, yeah.
Fred.
What's that, Diane?
Fred Luther, he was your first one.
And, oh, Fred was my, oh, that's right. Yeah, Fred was my first one. And let's see, who else? Oh man,
Fritz Berg.
Yeah, Fritz. Yeah.
William Pierce. William Pierce?
I never, William Pierce, did you say?
Yeah.
I thought he was dead.
No.
I thought you interviewed him before.
I never even knew who he was. I think he died a while ago. So I never really interviewed him. Let's see. If I look at top tier revisionists, then I look at second tier revisionists, and the major ones were the ones I just said. There's probably about five.
Mark Weber.
And then you have Mark Weber. I'm not too happy with Mark Weber. That's a whole other story. I don't know if you ever got into that story, but. The story with him and what's going on with the
IHR. Oh,
yes.
Mike told me all about that.
Michael Collins,
yeah.
Tell me all about that.
Yeah, so anyway, in fact, I just listened to all of Michael Collins' interviews, not interviews, his, he did four videos on YouTube, that are actually, just audio, but, he explained the whole case there. So I listened to that and, I feel bad to see what happens with revisionism, in the world and what happens with money, and it's really sad, people, they get involved with this, greedy
thing. I don't know what it is. They just want the money more than what the cause is. So
now, Jim, you interviewed the gentleman that wrote The Myth of German Villainy. What was his name?
Oh, Ben Bradbury. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, Ben Bradbury. Yeah, I interviewed him.
I tried to get a hold of him, but just was not successful.
He's pretty responsive.
Yeah.
Make sure you have the right information. I'll give it to you.
Okay, you can email it to me. But I read his book, and it was terrific. Absolutely terrific.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think if people out there listening really want to understand where the world has come from, you know, 1850 onward, all right, and why it's so bad, and who's behind it, and all that type of thing. His book, I think, is probably the best because he covers everything.
He gets
into the whole thing, you know. I mean, that's my opinion anyway. And you know, he sums it all up. He doesn't stick to the one thing. You know, he gets into everything, a little of everything. So you'll have a good understanding, and you'll see that nothing happens by accident. Everything is planned. Okay. What happened with Germany starting with World War I actually started before World War I.
Sure.
And, you know, he's just talking about how it all was planned out because of a jealousy between countries. Britain wanted to rule the world. I mean, that's basically it. And any country that was coming up that tried to usurp that, Britain wasn't going to let that happen. And so it was a jealousy between countries. And that's why World War I pretty much happened. They didn't like what Germany was doing. Germany was an up and coming tremendous country. And, there's a lot more to it, but, that's what happened with, World War I and the countries involved and how, you know, countries will get other countries to get involved with them. To fight a battle over something that they want to rule, and we have people that try to stop it, and it doesn't happen, and then here we go, Hitler comes on the scene, and he tries to do something about it, and he was doing pretty well with it, trying to contain everything, and then look what happened to him because of the United States getting butting in and everything else. So that's what happened. I mean, these things happen, and. Sometimes you wonder how it would have been if Hitler got his way. A lot of people say it would be worse. Some say it would be better. I really don't know. But, I just know that it can't get any worse, can it? I mean, I don't know. It's pretty bad now.
Germany wouldn't be paying reparations to Israel.
Right. Yeah.
If Hitler won.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Hitler wanted to take over the world. I think he just wanted to get rid of the bad element in Europe. And he was more concerned with Europe and Germany. And here's a guy trying to do what's right for the people. And then, everything gets turned against him in the end. And I guess he didn't realize, when he was dealing with the Jews in the camps, he actually was too nice to them. I mean, a lot of people are going to probably think I'm crazy for saying that, but, my opinion was, I think if Hitler ever had to look back to see how he treated the Jews in the camps, I think he might have done things a little differently because they turned on him. I mean, here he is trying to, contain them, and boy.
They were running the camps, and certainly they were not extermination camps. The most deaths occurred because of Allied bombing created all of the problems where they couldn't get food, they couldn't get water, and a lot of the people in the camps did die as a result of the Allied bombing. And none of this ever comes to the forefront. And of course, whoever gets their story out first, which is always the victors, and then you had the Nuremberg trials, and you had movies, and you had Hollywood producers, excuse me, that were over there filming things and then misportraying them. So now people really don't know the history of World War II, which was really just a continuation of World War I, which was really a continuation of the Marxist Revolution. So if you go back far enough, you realize and recognize what's going on, and it's pretty awful how history has been portrayed.
People, you know, they don't understand that communism was the big thing. And like you mentioned, it started in the middle 1800s. And, the Marxists and the communists, I mean, this was their attempt. You know, the first attempt was to take over, you know, to take over Europe and, in Germany. And they kind of failed. Okay. They failed at that until World War II. But, you know, then the next attempt was with Russia. And they actually succeeded. They got into Russia, and they took over Russia,
well,
and then Russia from there.
The next,
you know,
the first Bolshevik revolution that was successful was the so-called Civil War, and from that revolution, where hundreds and hundreds of Marxists fought on the northern side against the South, and.
You're talking about the United States. Then you had the
Dresden Convention in 1880. Then you have the build up for World War I, a Balfour Declaration, where England is giving away a country that didn't even belong to them to somebody that didn't have any ethnic connection to, and then you had the continuation of World War I and World War II, because between the two wars, all they were doing was getting prepared for the next war. And they tried to float the Holocaust myth after World War I. And it didn't work. But they also had propaganda against the Germans during World War I, the horrible Huns, and how they cut off the belt of children's hands, and how they were doing this and that. So the demonization of Germans began very early, and it was all, you know, the same people who were demonizing them.
Right. Yeah, they had a plan, and now look at the plan. It's succeeding in a whole, you know, it's going full steam in another direction. People don't understand it, but, that's the way it goes.
Right. Alrighty, folks, we're going to go to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna and our guests, the last 2 hours of today's program, are Diane King and Jim Rizzoli, and the websites are ccfile.com, and file has two I's, and jrizzoli.wordpress.com, and rizzolitv.com. And we will take some calls in this hour. If people have a comment or a question, feel free to call in at 800-313-9443. Okay. So you were talking about Brad Barry, and you were talking about other people, and you also mentioned Mark Weber, and we mentioned Michael Collins Piper. And it's funny how he got his middle name. He was born with the name Michael Bernard, but he used to watch a program on TV called Dark Shadows, and it was about
I watched that.
Yes, and so I was familiar with that too, and he just decided that Collins just sounded wonderful, so he just renamed himself, which is fine. That's how he got that name. And I thought it fit him very well. I miss Mike. Anyway.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that. Yeah.
Yes.
I was.
So,
where do people go from here? How can, besides education and besides, what do people do when people are so brainwashed, so indoctrinated, they are not doing any critical thinking? Students in the schools now are taught how to feel rather than to think, so they can be easily exploited. Things aren't true because you feel they're true. Things are true because they are facts. And it doesn't matter how empathetic you might feel towards a certain group of people, if it didn't happen, well, feelings are irrelevant. Totally irrelevant.
All we can do is put out the information and hoping that they will say, well, that's interesting, and pursue it. What happens is that we've been having enough. Are you getting me okay?
Okay, talk some more, I think.
Okay. A number of people, it's going to be individual. We're not going to have massive groups for the most part. They will check out the YouTube. So we're getting people with responding to YouTube we put up 2 years ago. They're seeing interviews. They're seeing things that Jim has talked about. Even my shows to some extent. And they start signing or subscribing to our YouTube channel. Now again, it's one or two here and there every day. We're not, again, it's like all the scattered sheep. So we put it out there and then more and more people. That's what Michael Walsh is talking about, this basically self-destruct of the narrative, because more and more people are hearing it and seeing it and reading it themselves.
Right. All righty. We are at the top of the hour. We will be right back, and we'll take your phone calls at 800-313-9443.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we do have some callers. Our guests are Diane King and Jim Rizzoli, and the websites of interest are ccfile.com. File has two eyes, jrizzoli.wordpress.com and rizzolitv.com. All righty, should we take some calls? Let's take who's first up here? John. John?
Hello?
Yes, John, go ahead.
I have a question concerning Paul Rossinier. He was actually a French resistance fighter who smuggled Jews out to Switzerland over the Jura Mountains. He's a very ironic character from what I've read about him. He was a communist, anti-Nazi, and what he ended up doing is that he was captured by the Germans and interned in Buchenwald and eventually transferred to Dora. Now, wasn't Dora the one that was showcased by Eisenhower for his film?
No, I don't believe it was Dora.
Was it Buchenwald?
I think it was one of the sub camps. It was a sub camp there.
Okay.
Buchenwald.
Buchenwald, yeah. Buchenwald.
Yes.
Was Rossinier, was he the first, the founding father of Holocaust revisionism?
Who?
Well, that's Paul Wassenaar. Paul Wassenaar, that's his name. Yeah, you're probably pronouncing it the correct French way of spelling it, I guess, but, yeah, he was the beginning, of all this, actually, of revisionism. And, he recorded his experiences within the camp.
What do you think is the most important faction that it was controlling? There were prisoners that were controlling things were communists, correct?
That's true.
Yeah.
And they had a corrupt relationship with the guards and the staff, didn't they?
As I understand what he wrote, yes. I mean, I only know what he wrote, so that's what he wrote, so.
What he eventually ended up doing was trying to debunk. What led him to want to try to debunk any myths about what was going on in the camp?
Well, he was hearing all the lies, all the stories that people were saying, and he just couldn't believe it. He goes, "That's not what I experienced. That's not what I saw." And so he made it his effort to go interview a lot of these people and talk with them, and, you know, he wrote his book to show what he felt was the truth.
And, I saw a video about a short about him. He concluded, when did he die, 1968?
Yeah, I believe it was in the 60s.
What he eventually concluded was there was no, there was, quote, no program by the responsible authorities of the Third Reich to exterminate the Jews.
There was never, if they had found one, if there was one that existed, it would be totally published completely. There never was any kind of extermination order ever. None.
But what he found was that it appears that there was a lot of rumors about gas chambers being circulated around in the camp. Who was behind
right. The
rumors around?
Well, in one of the group
the
of rumors was spread by the British. Well, the inmates would have gotten from somebody higher than them. So the British were spreading a lot of the rumors around themselves, and then these people are actually hearing people would come from camp to camp. And so, you know, people would hear something in this camp and then someone else would say something in another camp. And that's how the rumors all got spread. So, you know, it was just like lice, you know, they spread to everybody eventually and the rumors eventually spread to everybody. And that's why when you get to the stories, a lot of the stories, some of the stories could be based on fact, but not 100% on fact, like for instance, they talk about gas chambers. Okay, fine. Well, they did have gas chambers, but they weren't the people. The gas chambers were the lice, fumigation chambers. You see what I'm saying?
Really?
So
well,
what they did is they took something real and then they made it into something a lie. They have fumigation chambers to kill the lice, but then they made it into, oh, now there's these gas chambers that kill people. And people would believe it because they're in the camp and they can actually see where these buildings are. And so now what they're doing is mixing truth with lies. And that spread the rumors even more so. And that shows you how it is.
Were there any other concentration? The reason he, of course, he is ironic is because he is considered a Holocaust survivor. Were there others? You know, that came out of it, survived the camps or, they were in those camps and came out of them. Did they ever contribute to any studies wherein they, debunk myths about what was going on in the camps?
Yes.
that no. Gary Kunk had some video. Well, actually, the survivors that were telling stories.
Diane, I didn't hear the question. What was the question?
Are there any survivors that have come out of the camps that have told a different story?
Didn't come
is that
out
what
of the
you're
camp.
Saying, John?
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean that they tried to do their, any of their own research and try and find out whether to confirm or disprove any of the allegations that were being made besides him.
Let me put it this way. There were people like Staglitz. He was a judge. Okay. He actually wrote the Auschwitz myth, called the Auschwitz myth. And yeah, he was somebody that was there. He saw things. Okay. And he wrote just the opposite of what the people were saying. Of course, he got in big trouble for doing that. He lost his judgeship, he lost his pension, he lost everything. So you have men like him that were actually there in the camps. These Christofferson. He was a German soldier. And he was in Auschwitz, and he worked there. Actually, he worked in the part of Auschwitz that were growing the coat storage plant, which was actually, they're trying to get synthetic rubber from this plant. And he worked in the agricultural, horticultural department there. And when he was there for about a year, and he didn't see anything either. So, there were people that definitely gave their opinions, but remember, all these opinions from them were not accepted. They were all squelched. These people were run out of town on a rail. All right, so sure, there are plenty of people that saw the opposite of what happened, but you're not going to hear about them because bad things happen to these people, later, or they just covered all the information up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I can give you another example too. There was the last commandant of Auschwitz. I believe his name was Baer, B-A-E-R. I forgot his first name. But anyway, he actually recorded, his thoughts about things, and he did not see anything that all the other people said about Auschwitz being a death camp. And what happened with him, which was interesting, because he was supposed to testify. I thought he was supposed to testify at the Frankfurt trial in 1960 at some point. I can't remember when he was supposed to testify. I forgot the year too, but anyway. And he suspiciously died before his testimony. Okay. So his name is Baer. You can get all the dates straight if you look him up. I forgot his first name. But he definitely had, he was there. I mean, he ran the camp and he didn't see anything that they said happened. He was against everything
also,
he said that was happening.
There was also Hoss, who was tortured in the basement during the Nuremberg trials. He had his testicles squashed with boots, and he was told that his family would be starved and would be, starved or killed unless he admitted that there were 4 million Jews exterminated in that camp.
Right.
So people who testified at Nuremberg, and it was a military tribunal. It was not a trial. They were not allowed to bring any witnesses. It was a tribunal, which is totally different than a trial. They had no representation.
Right. Right. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, that's
John,
a whole other story, the Nuremberg
right.
trial. Yeah.
Right. John, did you have any other questions?
The allegation where if they broke the story of these fabrications back in the, or these are these, the, back in, Rassinier was publishing them. And how would it alter the subsequent history of the 20th century?
Oh, it'd be totally different.
Would have been a lot. Yeah, 100% different.
Right. But just because so many people believe that something is true doesn't make it true. The victors wrote the story, and so what we have is a bunch of fabrications. So anyway, thank you so much, John.
Yeah.
All righty. Let's take Nancy in California. Nancy?
You guys are all so knowledgeable. It's really wonderful listening to you. And Diane, I love your position on these people who have buckled under pressure and become turncoats.
Isn't she wonderful?
She is.
I love Diane.
She's so strong. I love you, and I was realizing that you guys are brave. You're entering the fray. You sit here and talk about what's happened to these truth tellers, and you realize you're probably in their sights. These people, I will not let myself get discouraged or frightened, because that's what they want. They fight. They don't fight fair. They're evil, despicable. I really dislike them. So keep up the good work, and thank you so much for everything
you
do.
Nancy.
You are welcome.
Right,
bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy.
Get on our mailing list.
Yeah.
Great. Well, Diane, you are a stalwart.
Oh, you're real sweet. I haven't suffered probably even a fraction of what Jim has suffered in regard to the losses he's experienced. But there was a mini-series a number of years ago, decades ago, called V. And the main female character was part of the rebellion to expose these lizards, essentially. It's lizard aliens. And she knew what she was getting into. She knew what she was facing, and she knew she'd likely be captured. And I watched, you know, the actress. She closed her eyes, just kind of bracing herself. She was running, and she closed her eyes, knowing what was going to happen. And I get that image in my mind. I said, you know, we are doing what we do when we can, as long as we can, because there will be a time when we won't be able to. And so regardless of what's going on, you are doing it. You know, Jim is. He's really getting a bird in his saddle, so to speak, in our neck of the woods. About doing videos. He says, I'm really intense. I'm really anxious about this. I said, well, you're really driven right now. So I have to believe that that's, you know, kind of like divinely inspired. He has been motivated. He said, I got to do this video. I got to do that video. Yes, get it out. Let's do it. When you get an idea, do it. Because there'll be a time we won't be able to. And they will, in their panic mode and damage control, will shut us down. But right now, and it real generous of Nancy to say so, what happens is, you become aware of the duping and the lying, and all of a sudden, I view that as bullying. I'm with Michelle. I hate being bullied. And she says, I will not be bullied. I see red when I see that, and that includes the U.S. government, the IRS, and all that. They're all bullies, and the Jews are the number one bullies. And how can you say, okay, that's fine, and knowing what we know, how can you say, oh, it's okay how they treated the Germans. I mean, that's okay. I mean, I know it's a lie, but what can I do? You never say what you can do. There's always something, even if it is just to say something. And Nancy, okay, got on the air. Don't you think that's being watched? She took a step of a courage to say something. That's a step.
Indeed. Indeed. Absolutely. All right.
About that, Nancy. Now she's exposed. But can you give our, my email is what we use, even minor gyms actually, to put the people on our email list. So which one do you want?
I think she hung up.
No, it's okay. Yeah, I mean, if you want to say it on your show.
Oh, well, go ahead and say it.
Okay, it's Diane K. King, DianeKayKing, all one word, small case, at hotmail.com.
Great.
Diane runs the our list. She runs our email list. We have over 100
people
on it. So.
Yeah. That's true.
Terrific. All righty.
Go ahead.
I was going to take another call, but go ahead and finish what you're saying.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say, we will provide updates about Michelle,
about Ursula when we get them, Monica when we get them, Sylvia Stoltz is still in the firing line.
Oh, gosh.
And those are just the women, let alone the men on the front lines, too.
Right. The women. Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful.
Isn't that something?
Yes. All right, let's take Russ in Minnesota. Russ?
Yeah, they just came out with a movie on Winston Churchill. I watched a 60-second clip from it last night, you know, where he's bragging about how we're never going to stop fighting and, you know, how you can count on Winston Churchill because he'll never stop fighting until he beats them all up, you know. And so that just came out as a movie. And then last couple of nights on channel public TV, you know, they've been airing a you know, history of World War II, and it's very one-sided, obviously. But one question I wanted to ask was, you know, my father fought in World War II, and he said that we were fighting against the wrong people, you know, and I recognize
right.
that, I recognize as he said that, you know, Joseph Stalin, obviously, and Winston Churchill, and FDR, we're scumbags, and we should have never been together with those people. And my dad felt he was ashamed that he got drafted into fighting for those men. But I want to ask a
good
question.
For him.
But I want to ask a question for someone who hasn't studied extensively as you folks have. So this is the kind of question that, you know, I get if I try to make comments like that, you know, from people who I know who aren't scholars, okay? You know, they're gonna, one criticism that I wonder if there's not some truth to it would be that even though you acknowledge that Hitler was a good man trying to do good things, shouldn't he have, would it be fair or not to say that he miscalculated in thinking that he could have a better outcome than what he got? And isn't he partly to blame in the sense that, you know, like on this show I was watching on this channel, the public TV thing, they were saying, you know, all of the generals, the people who under him were trying to tell him, you know, we can't do this. But they were always so afraid because he was, you know, they loved him so much they didn't want to. But basically the gist of it was that he should have been, you know, willing to recognize that this was not going to work.
Okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back, so stay over, Russ. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. And Russ, go ahead and continue your thought. You were saying that didn't Hitler realize it, that he was not going to be successful? But I think you have to understand it was a defensive war. It isn't anything that he started. And he was fighting a war on two fronts. And the Germans were very, they were very successful, when they did preemptively invade Russia or the Soviet Union. But, go ahead and finish your question and then, Jim and Diane can address it. Go ahead.
When I was watching this documentary, you know, it just seemed to me the power of, you know, of the United States, when you factor that in on top of, you know, the power of Britain and France and the Soviet Union, it's just impossible. It would be an impossible task for a tiny little country like Germany up against, you know, if it weren't for the United States to be thrown in there, he could have maybe done it. But when you put the United States in there on top, you know, with our big population and then on top of all of those millions of Russians, and, you know, how can a little country the size of Texas, you know, take on the world just about? And it seems to me, and I may be wrong, but it seemed like he was so, you know, committed, and I can understand why. You know, sometimes we feel like right is going to prevail. Right is going to be on our side as long as we persevere. But I think that maybe aren't there some cases where it would be smarter to just realize we may be right, but we don't have enough might, you know, to, so we better just forget about the whole military part of this. It's not going to work. How do you feel about
that? Well, I can answer that. Okay, here's the deal, okay? First of all, Germany was winning, okay? They were winning in World War One also, okay, until the United States got involved. In World War Two, they were winning again until the United States got involved. If the United States
didn't get
involved with that war, Germany would have won. I mean, they had style. He was beat. I mean, this guy was beat. He had nothing. He had no weapons anymore. He had nothing. And then the United States gets in the Lend-Lease thing and starts sending them over millions and millions of dollars worth of trucks and ammunition and guns and all these things. And that was it. I mean, he got what he needed, to fight. If he didn't have that, it would have beat him into the ground. He had him beat into the ground. And I want to address another point too. Well, go ahead.
Would it be correct to say that he underestimated the power of the United States and the extent to which, you know, we had Jewish control in this country?
Well, you know, you can always be, you know, backseat driver and go back later and say, I should have done something. I mean, obviously, looking back, you could say, well, I should have done this right, I should have done that right. But let me just tell you another point that's a problem here, and it's the same problem Trump's having, okay? You have to understand that Hitler had a lot of people that was in his administration that could have been holdovers from past administrations that weren't really too receptive to him. And they were probably sabotaging him all the way. Okay, so he was fighting against them also, just like Trump. Okay, Trump's dealing with the same thing. He puts all these Jews in office here to do this and do that. These people are sabotaging him all the way. And so Hitler was dealing with the same type of people. When he went into Russia, he had a plan that he wanted to have, you know, fulfilled, but Hitler got sick. He was sick for, I don't know how long,
but
a long period of time. Yeah.
He was poisoned.
And so he couldn't respond to how to handle the situation. And so his generals, I forgot the name of the general, but he had one general that wanted to do what he wanted. And this general, he ends up, giving up. He ends up giving up to the Russians. I mean, can you imagine? How can this be? I mean,
they also did not send the German soldiers the clothes that they needed to fight in the weather that they were encountering. They didn't send them the supplies.
Right.
The fact that the Germans prevailed at all was simply due to their courage and their perseverance. And had he not preemptively struck the Soviet Union, the entire, all of Europe would have been communist.
Well, if most of Europe ended up being communist anyway, I'm thinking, you know,
well,
that if he hadn't fought, maybe it would have been better. You know, the outcome.
No, it would have been worse. You have to do what you have to do at the time, and what Hitler did was absolutely right. And again, he had a lot of people fighting against him, even amongst his own people.
That's right.
And this is what happens with administrations. And people don't get it. They don't understand that there's always plans. The Jews are everywhere. Okay? They are everywhere. And they're going to try to sabotage whatever you're doing, especially if it's going to expose them. And he had the same thing. Hitler had the same thing. Trump is dealing with the same thing today. All administrations that come against the Jews or are in the hands of the Jews have to deal with the same thing, no matter where they are.
Well, they always considered the military that was against Hitler always considered him as the corporal from World War One, and they had been in the military, they had rank, and they thought that they knew better, and they were out to get him. Obviously, they tried to kill him with a bomb. So anyway, thanks for your phone call, Russ. We do need to move on. All righty, okay, thank you, Russ. Take Murr in Wisconsin. Murr, welcome. Murr, are you there? No? Okay. Okay. Oh, okay. Let's take Murr in Wisconsin.
Oh, now I'm through, right? I heard the
okay.
noise.
There you go. Okay. Welcome.
Well, you got to go through the time warp to get here.
Okay.
Yeah. I clicked on your Stormfront link there, Jim and Diane. And thankfully, well, not thankfully, it's too bad that they, some Jew made them take them all down because of the song for the Johnny Cash's rendition of Tom Petty's song, Won't Back Down, right? But in that second hour, I was the one that was ornery with the Stormfront family and calling out Don for treating me like a redheaded stepchild. He still does it. Makes me wait till late, wait the whole show sometimes, and then, oh, we ran out of time. I'm going to change my name to Russ.
Do you have a question?
Yeah. You know, it's really, Germany was half the size of is half the size of Texas. It's still a vassal state of this country until 2099. There are 22 bases there. But back at that time, Judea declared war on Germany and boycotted them.
March 24, 1933.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the Weimar Republic was like we have now, you know. I mean, it's a little more kind of hidden, or people are just used to it, because, I mean, sodomy is not natural. Hello? You know, I mean, all they own the media and the money. So it's an amazing time to be alive and have all you wonderful people to find out things through. I'm really enjoying it, really. It's amazing. It's really amazing. Yeah, I like Benton Bradbury, I like Deanna's work. So many good ones. In your chat room, and I'll repost it because it's scrolled away now, but Blackbird podcast, that's Frederick C. Blackburn, he did a special Lion Teens for Valentine's with all the ladies that are incarcerated in Germany.
Oh.
And, yeah. And there's a very good Unspun number 103, Jan Irvin's, with Robert Rowe, called Tartary.
Oh,
yeah. It's very good. He was to do a second part, but, apparently there was no show on Tuesday. I don't know what happened there. Maybe he got taken off of YouTube or something. I don't think so, but.
Huh.
Anyway, so I'll post those, but they're very good. And, you know, he wasn't funded by anybody else, and it was amazing. The people, in 5 short years, they were able not only to have the best cinema, the best everything, they traveled. I mean, these airships, the Zeppelins, you know, they still fly them over the stadiums. You think that's not safe? Of course it is. That bit with the Hindenburg on the radio, that was a double whammy, you know, screaming about Hindenburg and the fire. They set it on fire and the people had to jump out. That's what happened there. But they were beautifully equipped and they travel in them, and everybody could travel, you know. They traveled on the boats too. They went everywhere. I mean, and at the exact same time in this country, do you have a minute? Are we about to go to break? Or?
No.
Oh, okay. Could I read something I wrote? It's real short.
Yeah, go ahead.
That'd be awesome. 1933, when America was being depressed, gold stolen in a country half the size of Texas, a Christian man made love the currency, or as close as has been in our lifetimes. It was based on need of his people. No interest, no debt, no bankers backing it with gold in a vault somewhere. Freely given, an atmosphere of cooperation. Willing workers caring for each other. This is why he is vilified. Now, I felt moved to write that in, it was Chris Inkley's chat room, actually, and it was on August 6th, I think. And I got to run it by 3 different people, I guess it was. And it was amazing to me what a litmus test it was. John had Catherine Austin Fitz, I guess, one time since this happened, I don't know. But I read it, and she thought it was a Father Divine, which was a black man that was basically another op, kind of, you know. But, people can't realize they're so full of this crap media, this Talmud media, that they can't see straight. They can't think for themselves. They need to leave it all alone and let your mind clear out, right?
Sure. All right, Diane and Jen, your thoughts?
No, I just listening. That was good.
Okay, well, thanks, Murr, for calling in. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All righty.
I cut out a little bit. I couldn't hear all of it.
Oh. It is very interesting that the cement roads are still standing today in Germany, because they made their thoroughfares with cement. And if you look in America, right, which uses asphalt, which falls apart very quickly, they have to redo them and redo them and redo them. And in the news the last few nights, they're showing all these potholes because of the rain, and people are ruining their tires and, you know, dropping into these potholes. But Germany had some cement roads, which are still viable today. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, everything. Well, let's put it this way. If the Allies didn't bomb all the buildings to pieces, they had the most beautiful architecture around.
Oh,
and they ended up destroying the most beautiful buildings in the world. For what? Because they didn't like Hitler? And then he had a beautiful house, you know, where he lived. I don't know. It's called Bergenhof or something. Diane knows the name of it more than I do. And they destroyed the whole place. I mean, what was the purpose of destroying that whole house? Could have been a museum. But no, let's just destroy everything that is related to Germany. And they're doing this now in the United States, too. I mean, you know, little by little, they're taking down statues, erasing history. I mean, it's just how it is when you start to deal with it. Yeah.
Yes, it's a cultural thing. That is the exact same thing that they did in Iraq. You go in, the military goes in, and the first thing that they do is destroy the culture, all the artifacts, all the old buildings, that remind people of who they are and what they are. And, how debilitating, how absolutely cruel and insensitive and inhumane that they would, and going back to Dresden and going back to the firebombing and thinking that this, they were out to kill citizens. There's no military need to do what they did in Dresden or to do what they did in any of the cities. And they started with all the cities that had 50,000 people or more and started bombing them. And then after they had done that, then they started bombing the cities that had less population. And they were bombing the zoos. And they were just, that's animal.
Right.
It just makes me furious. It just makes me so darn mad.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I look at, you know, the United States is the ones that should have been on, you know, war criminals, tried as criminals, and, you know, technically we should be paying reparations to Germany to fix up Germany. But I guess we got out of that. We're probably lucky as a taxpayer on that one. But, you know, since we destroyed Germany, we should have paid for it. But, it didn't happen. You know, Germany can come after us later, I guess.
Well, Murr brought up an interesting point too, is that, while the economy in Germany was doing well, because the bankers were kicked out, they had learned to barter, they were working, cooperatively with other countries. And while all this was going on, while all this, these buildings were being put up, people in this country were standing in soup lines. And as Murr brought out, having, their gold seized and all kinds of things. And, you just have to question all of these things. I think it's just so sad. I was listening to or watching a video that featured John Gatto, and he was talking about the educational system in this country and how poor it was. And people simply do not have any critical thinking skills, and people do need to look at both sides of everything. People need to be objective and not just speculate and accept things that are taught them in a government school yet.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
Boy. Okay, we're open for more callers. 800-313-9443. And Leo has left my door, so I don't hear him crying for his mommy anymore. He does know that 5 o'clock is time to eat. And he thinks that, and he comes up to me and he tells me that it's time to eat. And, sometimes if I don't respond right away, then they go over to the cupboard where the food is and they open the cupboard. And I don't know what they expect that they can do after they open the cupboard, because they can't open the big jar of dry food. They cannot open a can. I don't know what they expect. And if that doesn't work, then one of the boys goes over and starts chewing on the cord of the Venetian blind. He thinks, okay, Mom, I really want something here, and you better cooperate. Let's take Fred in Michigan. Fred, welcome.
Hey there, Deanna.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, you mentioned the Dresden Conference. I think that was 11 September 1882, and then 11 years later, 11 years later, 11 September 1893, came the World Parliament of Churches Conference in Chicago. Apparently, the Dresden Conference was all about determining what intelligently, beneficently could be done about the Talmudic Jew banker problem and all of their, you know, unsavory,
all over
immoral.
Europe. People from all over Europe attended that conference.
There you go. And so I think, based on what little I know, Deanna, from your guests, I've got to do some due diligence regarding the Talmud. In fact, Chris Hinckley had a recent caller broadcast citing a book called Talmud Unmasked. Talmud Unmasked. And then I just want to call quick attention to the sheriff of Broward County, Scott Israel, who cited the Talmud as his motivational, inspirational force in his professional career as sheriff and all of his law enforcement duties, activities, et cetera, including molding, shaping consensus of the people of his county. And I'm thinking, Deanna and your guests, it seems, do I recall accurately, Deanna, from ACH's Synagogue of Satan, some prominent Talmudic Jew made a proclamation after Hitler had extricated all of these, you know, these satanic Talmudic Jew conspirators from the country, that they, the Talmudic Jews globally, were declaring war, a monetary and spiritual.
Well, they did that in 1933. They did that before.
It was on every German man, woman, and child. Is that correct?
Yes, and there was also a lot of nonsense going on in this country, where anybody that was affiliated were targeted. Cheyenne, Jim, do you want to address that?
Yes. Well, I mean that time period, when you think about it, like, people don't understand who struck first. Okay, everybody wants to think that, you know, Hitler was the one that started everything, but obviously 1933 is a long time before the war started, and the Jews in this country were the ones that saw what was going on. They instigated everything over there, because, you know, they wanted control. And what was, I think what was funny about it was the Jews in Germany, they weren't happy about what the Jews did in the United States, because they lived there. They lived in Germany, and they were going to get the repercussions of what was going to happen next. And the Zionist Jews in the United States didn't care. Okay, they didn't care about their fellow brothers in Germany, and they actually ended up putting a target on the German Jews because of their stance in the United States, a boycott. Yeah, so it just shows. I mean, the Jews will sell out their own people to get their way. Okay,
They did that in Russia.
Right.
Before it became the Soviet Union. They were the ones that were running the pogroms against their own people.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Okay, well, we do have another caller. Fred, did you have another question or comment?
Well, okay. There was the greatest story never told, Deanna. You interviewed the producer of that, right?
Yes, Wise. Uh-huh. Yes, I've interviewed him a couple times.
Thank you. And I have yet to see it. Michael Herzog on RBN did do, a review of one part. He's doing a five-part review series. But Danzig, Poland, isn't it true that 58,000 ethnic Germans were slaughtered by the Talmudic Jews of the Polish government after the Versailles Treaty, and all of these ethnic Germans in Danzig said, no way, we don't want to be separated from our homeland. And,
well, that was part of the Versailles Treaty. Yes, there was a lot of people were slaughtered. Yes, absolutely. A lot of people lost their homes, property. It was pretty terrible. If you read about the history, because they created Poland. They chopped things up. They created
And what about, there was, I wonder if the guests know of this concentration camp after World War II, where this guy Solomon Morrell slaughtered thousands of ethnic Germans and possibly others, thousands upon thousands. And so the Polish Attorney General in 1994, this is in ACH's Synagogue of Satan, 1994 demanded the extradition of Solomon Morrell for crimes against mankind, for slaughtering, murdering all of these, civilian prisoners of war in that it began with an SW. And,
well, you also have to consider all of the encampments, Eisenhower's encampments.
Oh, yeah.
There were 2 million people probably perished in those camps. So,
I think it was Ernest F. Fisher in James Bach's book. Did a review.
Yes.
He said 9 million German civilians.
Well, overall, the people that were going back to Germany were slaughtered along the way. Bach's book is terrific. I never did interview him. He's Canadian. I'm not sure that he's still living. Anyway, Fred, thank you for your phone call.
Thank you, Deanna.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's take Mick in New Mexico.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, welcome.
He's talking about Eisenhower. He's the one who ran those camps.
Well, he ran the encampments. They weren't.
Yeah,
really,
but he was responsible. He should be brought up on charges, but they never did bring him up. But here's what the clincher. What was Eisenhower?
He was a Jew, right?
He was German.
He was. By the name, he was a Jew.
He wasn't a Jew. No, he wasn't a Jew. I mean, you're getting roped into Jewish propaganda that want to make him look like he was a Jew. Okay.
Let's see, who's the first Jew president of America? I'm serious.
Oh, no. you're wrong.
Abe Lincoln was the first one.
Yeah, that was a nickname that he received when he went to West Point. But if you look at the data, you will find that he was not, okay?
Yeah, but I show the father. Rosenfeld, you know who I'm talking about, right?
Well, you're talking about FDR now.
And his cousin, right? Teddy Roosevelt?
They were related, but not...
Yeah, but they're still Jews, okay? But they were responsible. Let's go a little deeper. Have you ever heard of a guy named Pastor Peters?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's dead.
We're
going to
deal. We are not deal with Jews. Away on this side.
All righty. We are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Please address the questions and claims that Nick has brought up.
Okay, what, you want me to take that on?
Yes.
He was talking about Eisenhower again being a Jew? Or what was the other part of it? I don't buy it, and I don't care anyway. I really don't care what he was. What's that going to prove if he was or wasn't?
Exactly.
He hated Germans. I mean, he hated the Germans, okay?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's up to him. Yeah.
And he had, what was his name, Patton, killed for that? Patton disagreed with that. Now, but he tried to disagree with that one. Now, man, let's put it, I'm going to go for one thing. Who are the white people, and why are we being wiped off the planet Earth right now? Because of these fake Jews. They're not Jews. They're Esau Edomites. Understand that?
Okay. Listen, we're just about to run out of time, Mick, and we appreciate your call. And anyway, Jim and Diane, your websites of interest are ccfile, two I's in file, ccfile.com, jrizzoli.wordpress.com, and rizzolitv.com. And give us your thoughts before we close off the program.
Okay, first of all, is that if they are interested in communicating with us, it's Diane K. King, D-I-A-N-E-K-A-Y, King, K-I-N-G, at hotmail.com. And again, I say, become informed. Always be ready to give a defense. Do what you can, when you can, for as long as you can, because there will come a time when we will be hunted for our expression, of our nonviolent expression of our opinions.
Great. Thank you, Diane. Really respect that.
Yeah. And we're trying to, get more people on our email list that we can at least, have a representation of people around the world that we can at least communicate with, because again, at some point in time, we're going to have issues and we're going to have to be able to communicate with each other some way. And I think it's important for people to have people out there they know they can depend on and communicate with. So getting on our email list is very critical, and supporting all the movements that are trying to expose the Zionist Jews for what they're doing is very important too. All the programs that deal with that are really good, and we appreciate all the help we get, and we just hang in there. That's all we can do. Keep fighting.
And that is what we all need to do, is keep fighting for the truth. And I so appreciate being on your email list and getting the messages. It keeps me informed, and I really appreciate what you're doing, and I respect you both very, very, very much. So thank you so much for being on the program. Okay. Take care. We'll talk again really soon. Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye. And thank you, listeners, and I hope that you'll join with me next week at the same time, same place. Bye-bye now. Take care.